Hello, movie fans. Dimitri Panos here for another Anatomy of a Movie in the Popcorn Talk Network. It's boots to the ground, people, as today we talk about Hacksaw Ridge.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
That's the wrong one.
Well, as much as I'd like to be part of the movie
That's
press.
That's the wrong one. We should probably redo that.
Yeah.
It's okay. No, don't stop the stream. Just start us over and we'll turn in the beginning. Go to the left side. Go to A. Under Anatomy of a Movie, go to A. Right now you're in M. Go to A. Although, this is great music, by the way. It's the only good thing.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews.
Popcorn Talk. Just start us at the beginning, movies. Like we're going to do the whole thing.
Here's
again.
Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Gotta love it. Going again.
Hey, movie fans, welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie. Boots to the ground, people. Today, we're going to dive into Hacksaw Ridge.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Hello, folks and movie fans. Dimitri Panos here, host for Anatomy of a Movie, where today we are going to talk and dissect Hacksaw Ridge. Please help welcome me. Say hello to our esteemed hosts who are going to help me through this war. War is hell, people, but hopefully this Anatomy of a Movie will not be. To my far right, say hello, introduce yourself, say hey.
Hello, everybody. I am Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV.
And I am Emily Harlan. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at OMG, it's MLE.
And Marissa, we've been doing this forever. Look at this.
Forever.
We're
back again.
Two times the charm.
We're back again, back to back.
Very nice. So today we're going to talk about Mel Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge. As we start off every show, we're going to talk about our opinions. So I'm going to start off with you, Marissa. What did you think of Hacksaw Ridge?
Well, I was very excited to see this. I've known about this film for some time now. I've known about it since probably the summer. And, I saw the trailer and I thought it looked amazing. I'm probably going to really like this movie. I went into it and I walked out and I loved the movie. It was so well done on all fronts, and even the front of the line, but no pun intended. But it was just so beautifully shot, well acted. The story was great. There was a great balance of humor along with the violence of it all. It was good. It struck a good balance, and I went into it not really knowing like how faith based it was going to be, and I walked out of it like surprisingly. And, surprised by that, but, I enjoyed it. And I think it was just a really, really well-done film. And I've been telling everyone this past week to go see it because it's such a good film.
Emily, what about yourself?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I did not know a whole lot about this film going into it. I had heard from other people that had seen it that it was a really great film. So I thought, okay, I need to go see this movie. And, that always makes me nervous when I hear such high reviews for a film because I feel like then when I go see it, it's my expectations are a little too high and I kind of come out of it going, oh, well, it wasn't as great as everyone says, but it absolutely was as great as everyone said. I think so. And I think it's very fitting that we're talking about this movie on Veterans Day. So that I liked the kind of message, like you were talking about the whole faith-based and just with where we're at right now as a society in the world, just really showing somebody who is not giving up on their convictions and speaking out for what they believe is right, I thought was an awesome message. And I walked out of it just kind of floored. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, okay, we all know War is Hell is purported by many a war movie. I have to say that I think, has there ever been a faith-based war movie? I think this is one of the first of its kind where it was a very much deep-seated into a faith-based movie. And Mel Gibson has made one, and it works, I think, in a savage and even, believe it or not, an artful way. This isn't Saving Private Ryan, but it carries with it symbolism, inspiration, and it's a coming-of-age story that we've seen in movies like Platoon, The Big Red One, and even Gallipoli. And there was even a little bit of Gallipoli in this movie, I felt. And Red Badge of Courage. So, you know, I don't know if I can say this of any other war film, but it also manages on a certain level to be inspirational. Which again, you know, it's very, you know, rare. Like I think this is the first faith-based war movie that I've seen, and I think that it was handled very well, and it comes off. You know, I think Mel is a good storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, that is the bottom line. And I think that he succeeded in this particular movie where movies such as like Unbroken didn't. You know, Unbroken in a sense is a war movie and it's supposed to be inspirational. And that too, I guess, in a sense, faith-based about a man who perseveres a lot of suffering. But this movie particularly had a great cast. He had really good performances all around, and Mel Gibson's direction, I thought, was right on point. So, first movie he's done in 10 years, you know, we should add. So, yeah, I find it, it was very well done, very well done.
Agreed.
For sure, for sure. So, why don't we talk about one of the things I found fascinating about this movie is that this movie took a 14-year path to get to where it is today. And it went through many various different hands and ideas and scripts. And I thought that aspect of this movie, that it took 14 years to tell this story and to bring it to screen, was an interesting one. From 8 producers, $53 million budget. You know, we had Demarest CEOs, Cross Creek people involved. Then, you know, Mel Gibson's longtime producing partner coming in on board and, you know, what we're going to base this off of writers. You know, I just thought that trying to even get the rights from the Adventist Church and from the actual, you know, DOS to say, to get the yes, to get this movie done, I think was even, you know, a hardship in a sense. It was difficult to convince them that this was going to be done the right way.
Right. And I think that was some of the... I saw a quote that Doss had originally said he didn't want his story to be turned into the typical Hollywood story where they're twisting a bunch of things and not showing the true reasons behind why he did what he did. And so I think that maybe that was part of the long, you know, process to get here and part of the reason why nobody said yes at first. And I think that they did him justice in the end, I think, with the telling of the story.
Yeah, and I also find it very interesting, too, that, like, again, I always love these stories because, you know, 14 years actually started off at Disney.
Yeah.
You know, this started off at Disney with Bill Mechanic, who funded the first screenplay of this. And they were dissatisfied. They started over again. They hired the guy who wrote Braveheart for Mel Gibson, Randall Wallace, and a polish by this gentleman called Andrew Knight. And it just, you know, it got to a point where actually Disney said, no, not interested. Which is weird for me because I guess they must have had a hard time. Because on one hand, it sort of falls into a Disney wheelhouse of it being that inspirational
faith-based
true story that there was a time that they didn't just focus on superheroes and Star Wars and Pixar. You know, they would look for these kind of movies. But the fact that they became disinterested in the story, I thought was sort of kind of fascinating. But that so happens in this the show of biz.
Yeah, but like I liked how Disney was at the start of it because they're a name to listen to and get things off the ground running. Mm-hmm. So, like, I appreciate that they played their hand in that. But, you know, thinking, you know, after watching the movie, I'm trying to think how Disney would pull it off with being such a violent content type of film. And just the story itself is very uplifting at the end, but watching it throughout, I'm just seeing how Disney would try to manage that.
Well, it's interesting because after Disney, it went to Walden Media. And Walden Media is a very faith-based company. If I'm correct, these are the same people that brought us The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But they specifically said they love the movie, the themes of this movie, but they wanted to make it PG-13, which I think Disney would have also, had they kept on to it, said, you know, we're going to try to bring a bigger audience. We're going to want it to be PG-13. But Bill Mechanics said that's probably not going to make it as an intense as it's real. And there was sort of a clash, but eventually Walden Media, you know, they didn't want to let it go because they really felt so strongly in the story. But ultimately they did, and they were very gracious about the process and giving it back to Mechanic. And then, you know, now we're talking about, you know, we're in late night 2014. So, and then Oliver's Cross Creek and Johnson's Demarest Media soon came on board, and then finding Mel Gibson as a producer, or as a director, I should say, sort of kind of a stroke of it's good, smart thinking, you know, he makes good movies. Hell, he has perhaps one of the top grossing movies of all time within The Passion of the Christ. You know, getting him on board, this is a project that interested him, and it got him back behind the director's chair. You know, and then financing, I think, was funny because it all was firmed up at the Berlin Film Festival, and Lionsgate bought the U.S. rights. So to me, that, you know, that whole story, 14 years to make, bringing it to screen, passing from studio production company to studio, and getting this screen, you know, getting this particular story up on screen. I wonder if it took Angelina Jolie that long to get Unbroken done. You know, because this is an inspirational tale, as well.
I mean, that's true. That's a good point. But also, those are two completely different stories. Like, she had a connection to the leading man of that movie. So it's, what was the last name? Starts with the Z. Sorry. Him. But, like, those are completely two different stories with different messages. And, I mean, but, like, I appreciate the fact that it did take so long because that just shows, like, how much they wanted to get it done and how much they wanted to make it. And they, you know, I'm glad it was made at the end of it.
Yeah. No, I think that we're all, you know, as a movie-going audience goes, you know, it's good that it's out there. You know, right now, and talking about Veterans Day, you know, I'm actually sort of kind of surprised there isn't. I mean, do you want to pander to that? Do you want to exploit that it is Veterans Day? You know, heck, on like a Turner Classic Movies, you'll show like war movies, like as an homage, like this is a perfect homage to veterans, I think. And it gives us a different side.
Right.
You know, and that's, I guess, what I appreciated it about, too. I said, we've seen the war as hell kind of thing. But it's rare to find something that is can be inspirational when you come out of a war movie.
And that is true. That actually happened, you know, I think is just, it adds so much more to this film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where were you going to go?
Oh, well, like what I like is just that, because I think Mel Gibson did say a line that there's all these war movies that we see is that it's always, yes, war is bad. And the people who come out of it, their lives are forever changed because of it. And they're not really happy at the end. And I liked how this film, we saw the effects of the father after him being coming out of war. And then that was such a motivational key point in the film that, like, that he didn't want to do that. That Desmond didn't want to be like that person, be like his father coming out of this war.
Sure.
So, and like, I think that was just a good point to start the movie.
Yeah. And the other thing that I appreciate about this movie, since you talk about Desmond, his father, and all that, there was a throwback quality to this movie, where in a sense it was a bit American jingoistic. It had the, you know, where Desmond comes from is that very Norman Rockwellian type of town. The performance that that Andrew Garfield gives, like, because this is a movie in three parts, you know, it has three acts. We've had the beginning where we meet the family. We're in this community. Like I said, it's very Norman Rockwell-ish. And Desmond Doss, as played by Andrew Garfield, had the aw shucks kind of, you know, he just had that persona. You know, he's a nice guy, but there was also behind this, you know, we had the father who was in World War I, but we had the two sons who were inspired, and it was for love of country that they were enlisting, you know? And there were war movies that were made in the 50s and 60s that were about, they were jingoistic like that. It's like, oh, I've got to enlist, you know, I'm doing it for my country. And it had that, those aspects I felt in this movie, in particular, especially that first part, this setup of our characters. I guess if I was going to critique this movie, however, maybe I didn't pay attention or maybe I lost something, but what happened to his brother?
I was wondering about the entire film. I kept thinking, you know, oh gosh, is he going to find him on the battlefield and he's going to save him? You know, I kept going like, where is he? Where is he? And even at the end of it, you know, I still thought, well, what happened to him? I wish they kind of would have wrapped that up a little bit. And that was the only critique I saw in looking at other people's reviews of this film, was that they felt like that was kind of just left open-ended, and they wish that they would have seen a reunion of him and his wife in the film. I know we saw that at the very end with the pictures and the videos that they showed at the very end. But in the film, maybe him coming back to his wife or reuniting with his father in some sense. You know, just because we like to have everything kind of wrapped up nicely with a bow. That's kind of how we're
conditioned
to look at films.
I don't even look at it as wrapped up nicely in a bow. We just don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, well, on the brother's side.
Well, but again, it's not even like that we have it wrapped up. He just sort of kind of disappeared, particularly after what I felt was a very powerful scene at the dinner table when his brother came in uniform and Hugo Weaving gave this very, very impressed, very well done monologue about when he was in the war and about his best buddy and things like that. And he had, you know, he tells his son to leave, and the brother gets up and Desmond looks up and he winked at him. Mm-hmm. And it was just this one wink that says, it's okay, brother. You know, I approve you're doing the right thing. You know?
It was also a wink to the audience, like, all right, I'm out. Won't be back. You won't be seeing me again. because we kind of lost him there. But I did read on one of the trivia quotes that in real life, the true story, that his brother actually enlisted in the Navy, and the uniform that he was wearing was an Army uniform. So I don't know, maybe they just kind of didn't want to dive too much into that. But maybe that's why we did not see him for the rest of this, the story of Desmond, was because his brother was, you know, on a different area. So
right. I mean, I also questioned at the end. I was like, where did the whole family go? Not just the brother.
Yeah.
Because, yes, we're conditioned to, once you go through a traumatic thing, you want to see also a happy ending, like going back to safety, going back to the family, you know, that whole big return home. And we didn't really see that because I think that kind of just reflects what happened in real life. I mean, he did go back home, but no one really talked about it. Mm-hmm. But like everyone knew that he saved lives, but he himself didn't really proclaim that. He was just the most humble guy and he didn't talk about it as much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be nice to see if we did see how the community welcomed him back after knowing what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and for me, it ended perfectly. Like his story for this part was wrapped up nicely in what he did, and you know, I guess maybe in another movie, like, I would have liked to see him come home and, you know, reunite with his wife and everything. I think how they handled that was showing the actual Desmond Doss, showing photos of him going home or being home with his wife, and talking about all that. And that to me was a very nice, you know, it was a nice bookend to this movie. That seems to be like a common touch when you're making a true story. You find the actual people, you know, to talk about their experience and such. And I felt that it was bookended fine. I didn't find it to be gratuitous. So for me, that I didn't need the filmed version of his going home. I'd much rather have the things about him getting the Medal of Honor, getting these, you know, accolades, and he did reunite with his wife, and he told the story, and we showed these great pictures of him. And to me, that I was like, okay, I was fine with it. It was tastefully done. I didn't find it gratuitous or exploitive. In that.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of movies that are based on true stories or are true stories. If they can find, you know, if the people that were actually what the movie was about are still alive, I think it's fantastic when they put pictures or videos up there. It just adds so much more to it and kind of brings you back out of Hollywood land to, oh, yeah, this really happened. Like, this was somebody's life. You know, he actually did these things. So I just thought that kind of, for me, put the movie just above and beyond.
Yeah, and just going back to the actual Desmond Doss, where he really didn't want the story to be told. And as Mel Gibson says in an interview I found on Deadline, he was like, you know, like, he was a farmer growing his vegetables. He was very content. He didn't go to the movies, and he didn't feel that his life needed to be told via Hollywood. And, you know, Gibson went on to say, he goes, I think it was part of his congregation, too, that appealed to his senses, and that it was something about that this was going to be a movie about being inspirational, mm-hmm. as opposed to just war is hell. And, you know, Gibson thinks that sort of kind of helped him get the A-OK for him to get that through. And, you know, I think he would have been very proud and happy and all.
I think so, too.
You know, what it was. And I didn't think that it was over Hollywoodized. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, like glamorized.
It wasn't sanitized or glamorized to that, to that, you know, to that point. That's a good point.
I do have to say, Hugo Weaving's performance during that was phenomenal.
Yes. Spot on, like, throughout the movie.
I didn't expect his father, Tom Doss, to be such a key pivotal character in the first act, because, I mean, we saw he was drunk and distraught from the battles of war. But I didn't realize, like, how impactful he was to Desmond. And I think the performance was just so well done, and I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
It was amazing to me. In fact, probably his best that I've seen him. He really had that timbre in his voice that he always had, but he had a presence. Mm-hmm. And where that character's role could have been overplayed to where you really would have hated him. And I think that the way that it was written and directed, that you might not have liked him too much, but you sympathized, I felt. And you didn't like that he would beat his wife, or he would get drunk and perhaps even beat his children, which they didn't show a lot of. But at the end of the day, you understand that this guy was suffering from a PTSD. The scene at the table, I thought, was very powerful. And then when he shows up at the court-martial, I thought was a very, again, it was poignant, powerful. He shows up, delivers what he has to deliver, and then he just leaves, too. He doesn't even stick around.
And I think that scene, you know, not only was it just so well acted, but just also the point of the character, and just that he, you know, like you said, was dealing with really awful things, and like the wife, or, you know, Desmond's mom pointed out, you know, this isn't him. Who your dad is now is not him. And I think it just goes to show the two parallels when we're talking about what can happen from war and people that can just go so far on both ends of the spectrum, as Desmond and his dad did. But yeah, I thought it was just awesome. And I also like the scene when his dad breaks down and starts crying, you know, and the big moment with the gun. I thought that was just so beautiful and heartbreaking, but just beautiful in that moment. Yeah. So
Yeah, I thought it was great. And the court scene where the father shows up, that just made me like Tom Doss even more. Yeah. Because we see he's so torn and scarred and whatnot. And he didn't, he generally didn't want his sons in the war. But you can tell it wasn't out of bitterness. It was just like out of love. Yeah,
it was
son.
Out of love. And again, it's one of those things that this movie touches upon. It's one thing, you know, for a parent, I don't want you to go to war. You know, war is hell. But this was, he was talking from experience. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know you think that what you're doing is the right thing. I understand that. I appreciate, I respect that. But let me tell you this true story behind it and what they're not telling you and how you can come back affected. And I found that to be interesting in a movie that, again, starts off a little bit jingoistic, but you had this one dissenting character, this other voice saying, you know, because in the regular Norman Rockwell-ish kind of war movie, it's like everybody's getting together to do their part. The women are going to make, you know, the bullets, and we're going to do this, and we're going to work together. But in here, we had a different voice that says, I survived, and these are my best friends. Mm-hmm. And I felt that that was a, you know, he was an integral part of this movie, being a supporting character in this movie. Thought it was great. Thought it was fantastic.
I could see nominations for Best Supporting Actor.
Perhaps, yeah, perhaps, like, you know.
I definitely think he had a performance that could get nominated for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was very good. It'll be interesting to see coming on down the line. You know, I wanted to bring up a point. You both love the movie very much, and it's really interesting because, again, from this Deadline interview, Mel was asked who is actually responding to the film, and he said women liked it more than guys. Women liked it more than guys. And he goes on to say that, you know, he goes, the romance aspect, and there is something endearing about Andrew Garfield's presence and performance. Mm-hmm. He's a nurturer, and he believes that women gravitated towards this character because of he was very selfless. And Mel goes on to say, like, as a mother might be selfless or would be selfless, and he thinks that's one of the reasons why, you know, the women liked it through all the testing, and they did two tests, and women liked it more than men, which is interesting. I mean, I could say in the audience that I saw it, the women did actually respond to it and loudly at parts, you know, clapping and applauding.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, he was such a likable character. You didn't want anything bad happening to him,
right?
Because he was so, yeah, I don't want to seem naive, but like he was like too nice of a guy in the, mm-hmm. the first act. You're like, how could this guy want to go to war?
Right.
Like, how can he go into such a deadly place? And then, you know, we grew to like him so much that once he was there, we're like, we didn't want anything bad happening to him. And the fact that he was doing all these selfless things and saving people on his own, no one told him to do that. He wanted to do that.
Yeah, well, that's what he went in for. And I think it's interesting because you mentioned naive, you know, naive. Like, was there a naivete about him? I mean, there's definitely an innocence about him, but his naivete could have been, hey, I signed up to go into this war as a medic. That's what I want to do. I want to be a medic. I don't want to kill anybody. I want to help people. But yet they put him in the front lines where he had to carry a gun, and that's what clashed. You know, it would have been interesting to have at least some semblance of a scene when he was enlisting to hear somebody say, oh, yeah, don't worry. If you're going to train to be a medic, you know, you won't have to carry a gun. Because he did say, well, when I signed up, they said I didn't have to and that I don't want to. So maybe there was a little bit of innocence, a little bit of naivete on that character's part going into it.
Yeah.
But then that turned into, well, I'm going to stay to my conviction and my religion and continue to move forward.
I think there was absolutely innocence going into it. And I think that a lot of times with passions, we can be naive because a lot of times when we're so passionate about something, it kind of encompasses everything to where we don't really see what's actually going on. And I think for me, just going back to the part of women liking it more than men, I could see Mel Gibson's points. But for me, it wasn't the romance aspect of it. It wasn't, he wants to save people and that's so great. You know, for me, it was kind of more of like a humanity standpoint, mm-hmm. where I'm like, this person is standing up for what he believes in. He's getting beat by people and he is still there. He still has so much passion about this that he's going to do it, whether people tell him he can or he can't, you know? And just the fact that he was, you know, such a hero on so many different levels, I think that just really spoke to me. But I do understand what Mel was saying, how people, you know, kind of like that side and the nurturing side of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, back to your point on being naive and being innocent, you know, it seemed like absolutely going into that, he didn't know what he was really getting into. And you could kind of see that when he first gets there and he sees the bodies of soldiers lying on the back of the truck, you know, and his face changes and he takes his hat off and it's like, oh wait, this is real. This is,
yeah. And I think that was a whole trope, and that is a common trope. I mm-hmm. mean, that was a huge scene in Platoon.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a common coming of age war story, coming of age, you know, trope to see these bodies coming back, to even to see the people who are still alive being so affected coming back. And it's, yeah. like, who are those people? They're like, oh, they're the people that they just came back from the place that you're going.
Yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I found that to be, it was a really good scene. I like how, and again, I don't know if that was, it was like, if he took his, I mean, I liked him taking his helmet off, yeah. out of respect for them coming back. And again, perfect to talk about this during Veterans Day, because that's what it was. It was honoring these soldiers,
yeah.
The living and the dead.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, again, it could have fallen into cliche because it has been done so many times before, but I think it was Gibson did it, and it was to great effect,
mm-hmm.
over cliche. That it was very well done. Let's talk a little bit too about then. I want to talk a little bit about the romance, you know, in this movie, because again, I think it works, and I think for me it worked because there was an innocence behind the romance. Teresa Palmer as Dorothy Shutt.
Shutey. I really like Teresa Palmer. I've seen a lot of her movies. And that's how I've known about this film for a while now, because we covered Lights Out. And when she was doing promotion for that, she talked about what's her next movie, which is Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah.
So I've known about it since the summer. And I think it was such a great performance. And there was an interview where Teresa was saying that she saw an old photo of the real Desmond and Dorothy, yeah. and that they were like goofing around, like the fact that like Desmond was wearing her dress and and Dorothy was wearing his hat, so like the fact that they had a playful kind of behavior, sure. with each other. Teresa was like, we have to convey this in our characters, like, yeah. we have to portray this fun side, yeah. mm-hmm. to our romance, especially in a time like that where it's not seen as much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's more serious type of kind of courtship back in the 40s, but they had such a playful behavior.
Well, again, I go back, to me it is somewhat of a throwback kind of, well, like, look at It's a Wonderful Life and the courtship that goes on. Like, that is a fun, innocent kind of a courtship that's taking place there. This was a fun, innocent courtship going on, and I liked how Dorothy was portrayed, because she could be fun, she could be silly, she had that, but at the same time, she could stand her ground, mm-hmm. you know, when he said, I'm enlisting,
mm-hmm.
you know, she gets emotional and she goes, when are you going to ask me to marry? Like, you know, it was, I love that scene too.
Yeah.
And it only works again because of the performances and I believe the chemistry of these two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and again, Andrew Garfield walked around and he had that grin. Like, literally, I can't describe it as anything else other than the aw shucks grin.
Yeah.
And he was able to carry it off. And one thing that Gibson said, particularly about Garfield, and I couldn't agree with him more, it's like, I'm watching him going, I know he's older than the character he is portraying. You know, I know Garfield has some more years and experience under his belt, But man, he looks like he's 17, 18 years old. Like, yeah. He played the part. And, you know, I'm sure makeup and costuming had something to do with it. But he gave the part. He played the part perfectly. I did not go, man, they hired, he looks too old for the part.
Yeah.
He just played it so well. Definitely, in my opinion, his best performance in Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I do find his performance, you brought it up, it's nomination worthy, I think. Mm-hmm. Garfield's performance.
Yeah, I thought he did a fantastic job. And, you know, like you were saying, at some points to me, he was almost unrecognizable. You know, at some points I kind of was in the movie going, wait, that is Andrew Garfield, right? Like, you know, I just thought he did such a great job. And going back really quickly to Dorothy and her character, I totally agree. And one scene that really struck a chord for me was the scene at the courthouse when the dad, Bill, Bill, came up to her and said, you need to take this envelope in, you know? And she said, no, I can't go. You have to go in, you know? And I was thinking, she, up until, you know, Desmond stood up. Sorry, Tommy. Yeah. Up until Desmond stood up to his dad with the gun, she was pretty much the only one that's ever stood up to him, you know? And I thought that said so much about her and just about being a strong woman and being there to support Desmond, you know, and just stay there with him, I thought was awesome. I loved her.
There was that scene, too, where I like the support from the family of Desmond and of Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's the other good thing. You could tell that Desmond's parents really liked Dorothy and that she was good for his life.
Yeah.
And I believe that, too, in this movie. I believe that they were good for one another. And I think in part because it wasn't schmaltzy. It could have been so syrupy, but it was done just right. And I think it was performed perfectly. You know, you don't want to, you could take the aw shucks, but once it goes over that line and it becomes too schmaltzy, I don't know. You could have lost me, but I bought into that relationship. And I find that it was very important because it was her Bible and picture that in a kept him going.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a sense. It kept him going. Mm-hmm. Even towards the end. He's like, where's my Bible? Where's my Bible?
You know? Go get it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And the fact that also Dorothy questioned him, like, of his methods, of his, I mean, not really like questioning his values, but like, why can't you meet them halfway? Why can't you just like skate? This sounds terrible, but like, why can't you do just the bare minimum of what they're asking just so you can, you know, go to the war?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, I think those were fair questions that the whole audience was asking. Like,
yeah.
I felt like she was the voice of the audience who was the only one who could say that to Desmond, who could get a genuine response out of him.
Right.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. And it wasn't done in a sense that she wanted to turn him. She's like, just meet them halfway. And again, that was a really well done scene. You know, I think to Mel Gibson's credit, the way that he filmed the two of them together really worked because you don't want to overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you overdo it, you can really lose interest to some of your audience, all of your audience, any of your audience you don't want to lose. And I think the belief in this relationship and that it's not overly melodramatic and that I actually felt like I'm seeing real people. I wasn't seeing caricatures of people from the 40s. I was looking at real people and I like the playfulness together, but then I also like the seriousness of them as well. So I thought that was handled extremely well.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Extremely well.
I liked how one more thing. No. Like, I liked how Teresa actually got on board with this this movie, that she sent her audition video via iPhone to the then producer Bill Mechanic, who sent it to Mel, and she went all these months without hearing a response, and she just thought she wouldn't get the part. She's like, oh, I didn't hear anything. And then here they're like, oh, Mel watched it and he liked it, he wants to have a Skype interview with you.
Yeah.
And then she the day of the interview via Skype, like, all of her technology wasn't working for her, like, dead batteries here and there, and she had a gun on a computer, which wasn't working, and here Mel was waiting for, like, 40 minutes just to talk to her, and she had, like, no makeup on, and she said it was, like, the craziest interview that she had to do, because she was, like, super stressed, and, like, nothing was working right, and somehow she still managed to get the part because Mel really liked her.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, that's awesome. A fun story to tell.
Yeah,
that's a great story. And, like, yeah, 14 years it took for this. So, you know, that she had to wait a little longer. But, you know, I thought that she was, I thought she was really good. As we're talking about casting, actually, there were one thing that, too, that I really appreciated about this movie was that, okay, so they filled it with people that I don't readily recognize. Yes, we have Hugo Weaving, but he was playing against type to what I've normally seen. I mean, and he played in a different role, right? Yeah, exactly.
That's the first thought that came to my mind.
And Lord of the Rings, but he was really good. So we see him in a little bit in a different light, but he's a supporting cast. Andrew Garfield, you know, we recognize, but he's the star. I get it. Teresa Palmer, not a readily yet recognizable actress, you know, nothing that you go, oh, she's a big movie star. Yes, Vince Vaughn's in it for a little bit, but the rest of his company were with people that I didn't readily recognize.
Rachel Griffiths as well.
Yeah, but again, she wasn't my focus. Like, I, right. there was rarely an actor in this movie that took me out and said, oh, that's so and so from here. Like, I knew Vince Vaughn was in this.
See, I didn't know Vince Vaughn.
I didn't either. That shocked me first saw him. And I thought, honestly, when I first saw him on screen, I thought, oh, man, because I'm not the biggest Vince Vaughn fan. And I thought it was going to turn this film into some sort of, like, you know, this forced comedy in this really weird, awkward space. And I was a little bit, you know, bothered by that. But then it completely took the opposite direction. I thought he was fantastic in this film. I thought the comedy that he brought to the film was perfect and exactly what it needed. And I could say that this is my favorite Vince Vaughn, you know, movie ever, because I thought he just did really great. Yeah.
Well, I mean, did you see Vince Vaughn, and the other person that I really enjoyed in this too was Sam Worthington. I really liked him, but they were both featured in the trailer.
Yeah.
Not as me, but they were in the trailer. You know, and I too did like Vince Vaughn as well. But the company of men that Desmond was with, you know, I had to look it up because I like that guy Luke Bracey, who was, you know, in Point Break. So two people saw the Point Break remake.
And Teresa no offense, was in Luke. Point Break.
Right. And but I was like, who is this actor? I like this guy. You know, they weren't people that were bigger than this movie, so to speak. Like, there weren't people like, oh, this star or this. Like, I like the fact that for the most part, at least for me, there were relatively fresh faces. So I actually tended to start to care for them a little bit more so that when shit went down, to me, it added to the stakes because I ended up liking the performances and the characters as they were brought to life by the actors.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way because Luke Bracey, he had, like, the most room to grow as an audience member. You're like, okay, we don't like him, but we know eventually we're going to grow to like him in some shape or form. He's going to loosen up towards Desmond. Mm-hmm. And then here at the end, when he unfortunately dies, you're like, oh, no.
You know,
yeah, you know, like, so you feel bad for him at the end.
You
like,
did.
And at the beginning, you didn't like him, but at the end, you felt for him.
And he could see, like, he was probably the first character that recognized Desmond's courage. Okay, and wherewithal, like, on the field. And so he would cover him. Mm-hmm. When they had that conversation in the foxhole, it was a great, fun conversation, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I really liked it. But once that conversation was over, I was like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
I was like, he's dead. Yeah. He's not going to make it through. I go, because they just bonded and it would be cool for them to go off. I was like, yeah, he's going to die.
I know. I kept waiting when that scene happened and it was you know, he had the first dream, Desmond did, and then the next scene happened, I thought, okay, wait, this has to just be a dream again. Wait, like, let's go back. like, I don't want him to get hurt. And then, of course, it was real.
Yeah. So. Yeah, but he was really good. And again, I think it's a testament to the casting that they found people, you know, that... Because sometimes it can take away. Sometimes it can take away from a movie. And who knows whether it was budgeting but or whatnot. But I think the people that they cast for these roles, I think everybody did a really good job. Yeah. The people that we did recognize, too. Sam Worthington. Like, you know, he was really, again, outside of Avatar, it's like he was really good in this movie. Vince Vaughn, to your point... You know, he had that stint on True Detective, which nobody liked that season. Yeah. But at least he showed some dramatic chops. What I liked about both Vince Vaughn and Sam Worthington were their turnaround was earned. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Their arcs towards Desmond were earned. It wasn't just like, oh, you're a really good guy now. Like, they understood. And their characters, the way that they were written, showed that they were flawed. And they even said, you know, this isn't what I thought you were talking about. And but there's no other person I'd rather serve with.
Yeah, and like I did like Sergeant Howell, you know, Vince Vaughn's character, because at the beginning he asked all these questions like, "What the heck are you doing here if you're not going to fire a gun?" But then when Desmond got beat up by his guys, there was that one shot. He was like, "Oh, you don't deserve this." Like he actually felt for him, and it's like he's not being mean to him just to be mean. He's just being.
Dude,
he was being a leader and asking those questions, but like you know that he wasn't purposely being mean. Like he actually truly cared about Desmond.
Yeah,
and he told him, you know, can you identify anybody that hit you? You know, wanting to put punishment to those people that did it, and like to your point, I think he was valid to ask those questions because at a time like that, it's like, wait, you want to go protect me and have my back, but you don't have a gun. How are you going to have my back if I'm, you know? So I understand where all those questions came from, but I did like the kind of how he started turning and understanding and seeing the human side of Desmond, which I liked. So.
Yeah, and you said it, and I'm going to expand on it too. In that particular scene, there was a look of sympathy on Vince Vaughn's face that said, "Look, dude, just you don't deserve this." You know, had it been that Remy. The guy that was playing drill sergeants, like, he was an actual drill sergeant. He was in full metal jacket.
Yeah,
you know, the guy. You know, there's nothing sympathetic about that guy. And you know, but I thought that Vince Vaughn and again, Sam Worthington were like, why are you enduring this? Like, you shouldn't have to endure this. Like, it's almost like at that point, they recognize belief. But it's like, try to see it from our point of view, and we don't want you to get killed. Yeah. Like, in training, you know? Yeah. So I actually thought, but again, their turnarounds were earned in this movie. That was a great scene when Desmond comes to save... To save Vince Vaughn's character, and he lays down the thing, and he goes, "I'm gonna pull you. Just get on that." And he's got his gun. Really well done scene, you know. Those are the parts of the movie where, they were just the way they were filmed. It wasn't over actiony. And there was still the brutality going on. And it was just, they were very well done and acted and performed. Mm-hmm. And I think the casting, again, I think was spot on for this movie. Yeah.
And that's where I think the comedy was equally balanced. Because even during the basic training, we got all those, you know, insults, but they were still funny. Yeah. And like, even Desmond was laughing. But even on the war front, when he's dragging him away, he's like, this is not the time to be a hero now. Like, now you actually touch a gun. So like, there was still like humor and levity during the, like, they're literally in the war zone. There's that humor balance,
right? That was perfect.
And I think needed.
Definitely,
you know,
like, needed.
You know, it's, and again, it's sort of rare in a war movie to find some humor. Mm-hmm. But this movie balanced it very well. And again, I'm going to go to acting. I'm going to go to the writing. And I'm going to, you know, have to toss it to Mel Gibson for his directing as well. So the other thing, too, we have to talk about is the battlefield. The battlefield of this Hacksaw Ridge. Now, me, personally, I've heard many a time people are comparing it to, you know, the storming of Normandy Beach in Saving Private Ryan. Right. You know, and Private Ryan is a brutal movie. A very intense movie. I found that Okinawa, Hacksaw Ridge, you know, I don't put it. It's very good. It was very brutal. But to an extent, too, it was done artfully. I mean, there were shots that Mel did, especially fire and people flying. Like, he did it. He took a different kind of approach. And I think he succeeds because he makes Hacksaw Ridge look a little bit different than Saving Private Ryan. You know, and Mel Gibson always, when you look at Braveheart, right. Those are blunt, pointy instruments.
Like a Patriot.
No less brutal. Yeah, but Patriot, he didn't direct Patriot.
No, he didn't. But
like, Braveheart is very brutal in its violence, okay? Mm-hmm. And this movie was very brutal, but there were shots that were coming where it almost looked like the camera was above the gun as it's going through, and people are like, flipping and flopping left and right, and the bullets are coming out. Scenes with the flamethrower, and what, you know, he did it in a brutal yet it still was like artful way. He had his cake and he ate it too, because it's a dichotomy there. You know, savagery shouldn't be necessarily artful, but yet it was still savage and gory. But though, again, to his testament, a lot of the women that can turn off. Blood, guts, and gore. And there was a plenty in this movie. But it didn't. I know in my audience, no, not at all. You stuck with this movie. I thought they were filmed perfectly.
He certainly did. And like what I found out that was interesting, for the cinematography aspect of it, the Barry Robinson, who was the production designer for this film, he and his team created a 9x12 foot model of the ridge of the battlefield, and then, you know, the rest, everything else was on a soundstage. But they actually built like the place of where they shot everything for Hacksaw.
Yeah, and I like that Gibson, you know, did they used a little bit of CG here and there, but pretty much every explosion that happened. Like, it was all pyrotechnics. Things were getting blown up. People were set ablaze, you know, but to Gibson's credit too, you know, when asked what was the big challenge of staging all of this, and to him, his first words was safety. Mm-hmm. I had to maintain safety. Yeah. I knew what I wanted to film, and, you know, safety. Then he was asked even further. It's like, well, how was it working on the budget? And it's like, well, if I had a bigger budget, he goes, I had these insane ideas in my mind to do. He goes, but with the budget that I was given, which they're saying was an estimated $40 million.
You would not have thought this movie was made on $40 million.
No, absolutely not. He did a fantastic job. Yeah. And I, you know, he didn't have to go insane. How he filmed it,
I agree. I'm glad he didn't have a bigger budget, because I think if he would have done all of these crazy, wacky things, it would have taken away from the true point of the story. I thought that the battle scene, all of it, was shot, like you said, very artfully.
Right.
I never felt that it crossed the line or got too intense or too crazy. To me, it made it very real. It made me say, like, this is like this. I feel like I'm here. I feel like I'm actually there watching all of this happen. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, and some of it, I mean, I felt as if I was at Normandy Beach in Saving Private Ryan. There were certain scenes in this that were, from a cinematography standpoint, the way they were shot, you know, I didn't, again, it was just his blending, which is fine, because I mean, when it happened, there were those two soldiers talking, one guy gets his face completely blown off, and then the other guy gets his head more or less blown off. And then I was like, okay, and so it begins.
Yeah,
but it wasn't just focusing on that kind of grossness. I mean, he was able to use his camera in a very smart way, whether it was probably due to budgetary constraint, but he was able to keep the action going. He didn't have to be overly gratuitous. Could have been gratuitous. He's not a Peter Berg. Okay. Peter Berg, I've said this before, you know, Lone Survivor guy. Good director, it's all fine, but subtlety is not in his lexicon. Where I think Mel showed that I'm going to, much like in Passion of the Christ, which is also another brutal movie, a very brutal movie, but he does it, he's able to film it in which it can almost be accepted by audiences. They'll watch it, and where they might cringe, they might not slide all the way down to the bottom of their seats because it's too intense. It was very intense. It was well shot. You know, I liked how their pyrotechnics, they called it steel rain, or the Japanese people call that steel rain, with that fire just coming all over the place. Yeah,
it was, yeah, they call it steel rain because it was the first use of napalm.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And yeah, they squirted the guys down with petrol and stuff because it was that bad.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it looks scary, and especially the guy who was carrying the pack that was filmed. And then when he exploded, I'm like,
yeah,
oh,
that was crazy.
That, like, it went everywhere.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
At first, I was thinking, like, seeing him use it, I'm like, okay, if I was ever in a war and I had to carry a weapon, like, that's the one I would want. But then after what happened to him happened, I'm like, okay, I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass on the flamethrower. But
yeah, you don't want that big target.
Yeah, that was another thing. I was like going, yeah, okay, I know where this is going. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, there we go. That's how we, you know. But it was, oh my God, that scene when there were the Japanese soldiers were all coming up from underground.
Yeah.
Like a swarm of bees. Like, that scene was crazy.
And that was the first thing they saw in the morning.
Yeah. That was scary. Waking up to that. I know. It felt like what was that, World War Z, when everyone's rushing you and trying to kill you, and you're like, do I do?
I want to talk a little bit about Hacksaw Ridge. Again, it's, you know, they had to drive to it, and then they had to climb, okay? So I thought it was interesting that, like, okay, so they got to climb this net. This is something that they learned in basic, okay? But you have to climb a ridge. Like, they couldn't drive up to this ridge, okay? And to overtake this, you have to climb up. And I was thinking, geez, like, what's to keep the Japanese from just, like,
cutting
it
down?
As soon as the head pops up, you just cut everybody down. I thought there would be more of that, but it was more like, we're gonna lure you in.
Yeah,
like, we're gonna get you all in, and we'll take care of you that way. It was very fascinating because I also like the dichotomy, like, because there was such a difference between what it was like on the bottom of the ridge, and once you get to the top of the ridge, the atmosphere completely changes. We go from, like, almost sunny beach, you know, his
safety to danger.
Mm-hmm. And you got that instantly from production design, from the smoke or the fog, and, you know, where is this? And I like that aspect of this movie, like, a lot.
Yeah. I was wondering, just watch, you know, looking at the whole scene, what is keeping, you know, the enemy from just cutting down the net, and so nobody can come up there. But then, you know, knowing that they are trying to lure them in and saying, like, okay, we're going to, like, almost funnel you. Like, it was like 300, you know, where they're like, we're going to make you come here and where you're more vulnerable, and then we're going to keep just picking you off.
Yeah.
So, it was just really shocking to me because, you know, obviously to see that type of a war, that type of a scene is, you know, we don't see too often. So.
Yeah, but I think, too, that ridge is very, like, symbolic. I mean, symbolic in the way of, you gotta go up, but how am I gonna get these men to safety? Like, it's another hill to overcome, in a sense, in getting the men down, and having one man I mean, it just makes that task that much harder, that more difficult, because you just can't, like, bring him over to safety and drop him off in an ambulance.
Right.
He had to, with a rope and tie it and let, you know, lower him down in a way. You know, it was, again, yet another insurmountable odd in having to deal with in what was already an impossible situation. For these men.
Yeah, and he did it over and over.
Exactly.
And over again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and you see him struggle the first time, but, like, the fact that he did that, like, 75 times.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I think that just speaks to his character of who he is. The mm-hmm. fact that, yeah, he was going out and saving these people, but then taking it to the next step and lowering them on a rope, you know? And if this wasn't a true story, I would have looked at that and said, oh, come on, like, that one, it really happened. But right. just the fact that it did, I think, is just astounding and just, again, speaks to Desmond Doss and yeah. who he was.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. So, and again, Andrew Garfield, too, points out that one of the things that really stuck with him in taking the role was that it was a war movie where spirituality, inspiration was front and center. Over, you know, and it really was, when you think of it, above and beyond all else. You know, I said it at the top, we've seen it in many a movie that war is hell. We know that war is bad and what it can do to a person. Oliver Stone has made a career out of showing us PTSD, things from Born on the 4th of July, Platoon, movies such as that. You know, here was a movie where, yes, war is hell, but perseverance, courage, faith, inspiration can also be born from this hell. And good things, while there is death and carnage around me, this Desmond Doss comes and shows that, you know, he can rise above, in a sense, you know. Which is a very interesting take on a war movie, I think. Mm-hmm. So.
It is. I liked how, like, you can clearly tell the differences in the acts of this movie. Like, it looked visually so distinct from each other. Mm-hmm. From, you know, the ridge to the home base, or, like, when in the first act, when where Desmond grew up, like. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, they converted an Australian town to look like Virginia.
Right.
They had to put, like, up all these different signs to make it look quote-unquote American.
Right.
So they said that was a big challenge for them. But it, I couldn't have tell.
No.
I couldn't tell.
And again, to me, that was that piece of Americana that is sort of throwback that we do see in those older war movies. And again, from production design to editing, cinematography, everything brings this movie and the three parts. I mean, they are three distinct parts in this movie. You know, and each one has its own distinct look and or feel.
Colors. As well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even the acting changes. You know, even the acting, you know, the acting to me changes a lot. Andrew Garfield at the beginning of the movie, it's, as opposed to when he's actually in the thick of things, completely different man. He even looks different,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
physicality-wise, whether, you know, not just from the training, but he looked older.
Mm-hmm. So more mature.
He looked more mature.
Yeah.
Life know,
in doing
experience.
This, which is very yeah. interesting to me.
One more cool thing that I thought was interesting doing the research, that they actually filmed the war scenes first.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole family being in Virginia at that time last. They did all the dramatic parts last. So, you know, movie magic, how things yeah. always shooting out of order.
Right.
Like, I found that cool.
And it makes sense, too, because I think you'd want to get your hardest stuff
done.
Your most technical, hardest stuff done out of the way so you can work on piecing it where your softer tones and non, let's call it special effects, you know, need to take into place. But it is fascinating because there has been a trend that we've, doing the show that we've seen where some movies are have been shot actually chronologically, mm-hmm. whether it's for setting purposes or not. But yeah, I think filming it in that way, talking about budgetary reason wise too, seems to sort of kind of make sense, you know, and it is the magic of editing and putting a movie together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating, like, how an actor too is going to have to perform starting off this way and then change cadence in order to do the first part of that movie, because they're so different, you know?
Right.
So, I think to your point too, it makes this movie timely, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what time does to this movie, in a sense.
I think you could watch this movie any time of year, honestly.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah. And I wasn't even, I'm just like saying, how will time continue to, like, what, how are we going to be going into Oscar season? What are we going to see? I mean, one thing that we haven't really talked about that I think bears at least a little bit of discussion is this is Mel Gibson's first movie in 10 years. And whether or not Mel wants to talk about seriously, like, why 10 years? I find it very interesting. To say that Mel Gibson some years ago had a meltdown is an understatement. Not gonna, like, that's for all the public to see and hear. I think what is interesting is it was a meltdown that Hollywood executives and actors said, I am never going to work with that man again. Never. Like, I'm not working with him. And, all it need take is, well, one very good movie. I mean, when you look at Robert Downey's career, and their meltdowns are a little bit different. Robert Downey's was drug related, and he had something to overcome. Mel Gibson can apologize, saying, "Well, you know, 8 double tequilas, whatever." Doesn't excuse behavior, but now he seems to be sort of kind of sitting back up, in the cat seat again. Like he's being. It's interesting. Like there seems to be like that Hollywood forgiveness. Just make me one really good movie that's going to make me some money, get some really great reviews, potentially get me nominated for an Academy Award, and oh, okay, Mel. Like,
we'll look past it.
You're back into the fold. You know, it's the Hollywood hypocrisy in a sense. And he did really make a good movie here. And there's no denying it. I'm just, you were talking about it before we set in here. We were talking about the grosses. And thus far, we're looking at a domestic gross. It hasn't opened up overseas yet, but we're looking at a domestic gross of about almost $20 million. Almost $20 million all in. It was number three over the weekend, where it did $15 million. It's opened up on widest release. It's 2,971 locations. Okay. It's just very interesting. I mean, right now at 20, it's 19.9. So I'm just going to call that 20 million. I think word of mouth on this movie, you said.
I've been telling everybody. I've been telling everybody. See it.
You know, Rotten Tomatoes, it's got an 86%.
It's really high on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm.
It's high. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's high. 86 is a good number. CinemaScore audiences are liking it.
It's an A.
And I think once they start, I mean, I think it's a good time to release because now we're starting to eke into the holidays. I mean, Thanksgiving is going to be around the corner. If Lionsgate plays their cards right, it'll continue a momentum where, okay, maybe it won't ever be like the number one movie. However, it'll sustain and remain to be in the top five. Like, it'll hang on, and then if it does get more accolades and, say, some award type of attention, that'll keep it hanging around at least through Christmas. You know, I'm sure that's the hope.
And you were also saying this movie isn't a worldwide release. It's only in limited places here in Los Angeles we were able to see it, but across the country, other people haven't.
Well, I haven't seen it, but, I mean, I wouldn't say 22,900 is limited. Like, if they had gone 1,500, I mean, they opened it wide, not Doctor Strange wide, yeah, but they opened it. But not worldwide, but domestically they put their best foot forward and they released it wide here, and it'll eventually get its foreign theatrical run as well. So it'll be interesting to see there. I guess what I want, like, 20 million thus far is, I think, highly respectable. Mm-hmm. So far, mm-hmm. for a war movie that's going up against comic book movies, family animated movies, going on down the pike, we're going to see wizarding movies, you know.
Right.
I think it has the potential to stay in there. I just wonder, will this be will this be the forgiveness will the people forgive? Will it be above and beyond, or will the taint of what happened maybe sort of set up a wall to him maybe receiving awards or getting nominations? Look, sometimes scandal, look at Schwarzenegger's career. Scandal pretty much torpedoed a lot of his career. Mm-hmm. Okay, very hard. He hasn't really overcome that yet. Mel Gibson, he took 10 years off. He's back in the director's chair, and people are now throwing him praises.
The thing is, like, what happened wasn't a deter on his filmmaking aspect. It wasn't a deter on his acting choices or his directing choices. It was just him as a person. Mm-hmm. And, like, yes, he made another film that may not change who he is as a person and what people remember, what he's capable of. But people know he's a good filmmaker. People know he's a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. And just because he had those incidents doesn't affect how he actually works. You can love the career, but not the man.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Can you? Because, again, I'm only going to throw out there because...
No, I think some people can.
He said some pretty harsh stuff.
No, I know, but exactly. But, like, you can love the work, but not the man.
Yeah.
Like, that happens with a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Woody Allen continues to work, but his movies don't bring in $20 million in the opening weekend and such. Same can be said about Roman Polanski. You know, it's just very interesting because I do find that Hollywood can be very forgiving if you have an accolade type of a hit movie. My only suggesting towards Mel Gibson would be, would you just shave that beard? Shave that scruffy Grizzly Adams.
What are you talking about? It's Movember.
Beard.
You gotta wait till December for that.
You know what? He did not grow that beard.
No, I know.
In Movember. So,
it's not.
You know, I mean, he's doing his due diligence and he's going out there and, you know, he's doing his interviews. He's pushing his movie. I think he's doing a really good job at that. I would just say he can't be upset if that past is brought up in an interview. I think they're very valid questions, but, you know, he seems to get very touchy when you talk about that. Regardless, you know, he still made a very good movie with a good cast of people, a good cast of producers, and a studio that was willing to take a risk. I mean, let's face it, you'd be taking a risk in trying to in releasing a Mel Gibson movie. Jodie Foster's taken that risk. You know, there were some people who stood beside him, and he had some really good friends. I think he's fortunate that he had some good friends along the way that stood behind him and kept him working, kept his creative juices flowing. I think this was a project that was, especially after A Passion of the Christ, which I believe he's going to be making a sequel. I believe that this was the right choice for him to do, you know.
Right.
I think. I mean, he could have maybe done a Lethal Weapon movie.
Also, the right time, right story to do it.
Yeah.
Like, he could have done any movie from here and up until 10 years ago. But, like, he chose this one. So you can definitely tell, like, there was a story, there was the characters, there was passion behind this film that he really wanted to do it.
Right. Absolutely.
And it was uplifting and inspirational at the end of the day.
Yeah, and he knew what worked for him, like, in the past. Like, this, again, it is a very faith-based movie, and that is what drove a lot of Passion of the Christ. And that's what he marketed. That's what he interviewed a lot. And so, in a sense, it's somewhat of his wheelhouse. And this movie is very much like that. And the symbolism, like when Desmond was being, mm-hmm, when he's in the stretcher,
yeah,
and he's coming down, and the light, and the, you know, it hits you over the head, but it doesn't hit you over the head. Like, it was, okay, I get it. But that's what Mel Gibson brings to the project.
He lives.
I thought it was beautiful, though.
I did,
like,
too.
Yeah, I totally told, no, like, totally could tell what he was doing.
Absolutely.
But I just like the message at the end, because he spent this whole time saving all the guys, and now they're the ones who are saving him.
Yeah, and apparently, too, because he stayed in the army for, I believe, 2 more years after this. And he was heroic and saved many other people outside of Hacksaw Ridge. But, too, in the research that I had done, I found it interesting that his barracks life, his training life, his being with his company was a hell of a lot worse than what was portrayed in the movie. And Mel Gibson, he's like, he was amazed when he researched and found, he goes, it was way worse than I was able to portray or wanted to portray. He goes, because if I left it in there, I would have lost audiences, because it was, apparently it was really bad. The beatings that this guy took, the indignity that he took, he goes, audiences really would have thought he was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like for doing this, he goes, I had to show something, but there's no way, he said, I could have shown
everything
that happened to him while he was with this company. It was way worse than he could have portrayed. Yeah. So I found that interesting.
I think he got the message across, though, you know, with what he did show. I think we all understood, you know, what was going on there. But
yeah. And it was a well-paced movie, too. For a movie that goes a little over 2 hours, you know, I found I was wrapped. Outside of the intensity, even the beginning. I was well brought into this story from beginning to end, for sure. So I was not bored by this movie. So what did you folks think about pacing? And such, did you feel that it was too long?
Or? No. I knew going in, somebody had told me that had seen it before, that it was, a movie that was over 2 hours. So I was expecting, like, oh my gosh, am I going to get in there and just sit there? When is this going to be over? But I didn't think that at all. You know, I never felt like it was dragging on any scene. And I think that's partly because of what we were watching. And, and you know, it's like I was involved the whole time from start to finish.
Yeah.
It never dragged for me, because I think that, again, there was the balance of humor that I enjoyed every act. But I liked how each act had a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first one was fun and light, and the second one, it kind of got more dramatic with the family aspect and the military training. And then the third, where you were just, like, so engrossed in everything being so overwhelming, how could you not watch it?
Yeah.
And I think there it was just an equally balanced all around. Yeah.
Let me ask, would you agree that there's very little fat to be trimmed? Like, that's one of the things that I think about of a movie. Could something be trimmed, maybe changed, whatever? And when I walked out of this and I was giving this movie a lot of thought, yeah, there wasn't, for me anyways, there wasn't any real fat to be trimmed off this movie that I can think that they could have saved time here, or this didn't make sense, outside of the brother being unexplained, which might have added a minute or two.
But
outside of that, I really can't think of anything that was displaced in this movie.
Right, but even the brother, like, showed just the character who Desmond is. Like, he built that competitive personality. Like, he overcame challenges. You know? Like, he could stand up for himself because he saw that whole fight at the beginning.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, you know that Desmond can handle himself.
Sure.
Thanks to always being with someone who constantly challenged him.
Absolutely.
And even like the hikes when he went on with his brother and with Dorothy, it's like, you know, he has the physical capability of climbing and you know, he has the physical strength and stamina to endure what he was going to go through the war. There's like so many different qualities in every act that you just understood what Desmond was capable of.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. All right. Well, There we go. We were talking Hacksaw Ridge. Hopefully, our dear audience, you agree. And if you disagree, please let us know. So as we're wrapping things up, any final thoughts from you, Marissa?
I love this film. I might see it again in my tight schedule that I have. but it's so good, and I will buy this. Yeah. I would definitely buy this.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I thought it was just fantastic. Again, I can't, I'm still just overwhelmed by what one man accomplished and was capable of, and just the story behind it, I thought is so inspiring. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
See, Emily, isn't the show a lot different when you actually like a movie?
different than last week. Yeah.
I just like that it was a bit of a different take. That this wasn't necessarily just a war movie. I do like that it was a true story. I appreciated the performances highly. It'll be very interesting going from here forward, see what other movies are going to be coming out and how the movie is going to fare once we get up to the ever important in this business, the award season. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you know, it's nomination worthy on many aspects, I believe. So,
technical and acting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Heck, even writing.
And you know, when you think about what Mel Gibson was able to accomplish with not the means that he might have been used to, say, 10 years ago, pulled it off. I think he pulled it off very well. He made us a good movie to go watch. So, ladies and gents, stay with us at Anatomy of a Movie on the Popcorn Talk Network, because we've got so many other movies coming out this holiday season to watch. They could be great. They could be not so great. They could suck. But we're going to be there together with you to celebrate, commiserate. We have movies like Doctor Strange, that we're going to talk about later today. We're also going to do
Fantastic Beasts
and Where to Find Them, which I can't wait for. We've got the holiday season coming up. We've got Arrival. We got Passengers. Star Wars Rogue One. We have so many movies to talk about and have you as part of our discussion. We thank you very much for giving us your time, tuning in. Please be part of the discussion. If you see us on YouTube, give a comment. Let us know what you thought of the movie. So it's very much appreciated, and it is paid attention to, most importantly. So until next time, thank you folks for watching. I'm Dimitri from Anatomy of a Movie at the Popcorn Talk Network. We'll see you at the movies later on.
Bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.